Every day, Bill Frank...
We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only.
...talks with the best guests in America about business.
You mean business?
Monkey business?
Are you ready to get down to business?
All right! Everybody's here and that means we can get down to business.
Entertainment.
Entertainment.
The entertainment capital of the world.
What kind of entertainment?
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Sports.
Game on.
A grueling test of strength, speed, and stamina.
Wow, just like in the pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host.
Bill Frank.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. You can also hear me streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work in Ventura and Santa Barbara. The Bill Frank Radio Show is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 805-289-1520. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is things that impact our lives. Each of my guests will discuss his or her subject and relate it to current events. My next guest is a journalist who's examined murderous rampages such as the one at Aurora, Colorado. She's concluded that criminals are made, not born. We'll discuss her findings contained in her latest ebook, Murder's Most Foul. Rebecca Coffey is an award-winning print and radio journalist and a documentary filmmaker. She's the author of the ebook Murder's Most Foul and The School Shooters in Our Midst. She currently contributes to Scientific American and Discover magazines and is a broadcasting commentator for Vermont Public Radio. Her column, The Bejesus Out of Me, Startling Behavior Science, is at Psychology Today. Her television documentaries about health and mental health have been broadcast nationwide. One was twice featured on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Joining us from back east, hi, Rebecca. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Bill?
Well, thank you for being our guest, especially on such a topical issue as the Aurora shootings. It was the nation's largest in terms of the dead and injured. And what do we know about the shooter, James Holm, the alleged shooter, I should say, James Holm? You know, how does he compare or resemble other school shooters that you've researched for your book?
Well, first of all, he's male. He worked with guns. And he seems to be mentally ill. Many of the shooters they don't have a diagnosis when they act out, but they quickly get one afterwards, whether or not that helps them legally. It usually doesn't. Only one has gotten off pleading insanity. He had come to the attention of a school psychiatrist, which is typical or frequent. He had been reported to the school. That's generally the way things are going to go. And somewhere the school dropped the ball.
Well, that's a disturbing fact, Rebecca, and I want to come back and I want to concentrate on that. But based on what you said, some of the things that you pointed out, he's male, he used a gun, and it involved a school, or at least involved him reporting this at school. Those are some of the commonalities. What I find it's disturbing is that the FBI has really been unable to create a profile for this slaughter-type killer beyond what we just talked about, that they're male, they use a gun, and it somehow involves the school. So you've traced this. I mean, you've really gone back and done your research on this. This is not a new phenomenon, although it has accelerated in the last few decades. Tell us the story about the first mass murder at a school all the way back in 1927.
That's right. It was in Bath Township, Michigan. And this was a mass murder perpetrated by a school board member. It's not usual that they are adults from outside the immediate school community that commit the mass murders, but this isn't the only instance of such a case. So this was an angry school board member. He had been outvoted. The school board had elected to build what he thought was an expensive new school. And so he murdered his own wife, blew up his farm, and blew up the school all in one fell swoop. And he killed, I believe it's 37 elementary school students that day.
Oh, my goodness. I mean,
he drove his car into the middle of the rescuers and blew it up. And that's how he died. But then he killed a lot of the rescuers.
Mm. I mean, it's a tragic, tragic story, as all of these are. Now, it should be noted that he killed his wife first. And that seems to be something that is common in your research as well. Why do these murderers kill their family members first?
Either because they don't want to be stopped, or because they don't want to inflict psychic pain and embarrassment on their family members. They are sane enough to love them and want to spare them, and insane enough to think that the way to do that is to kill them.
Mm. My guest is Rebecca Coffey, author of the book Murder's Most Foul. Well, now, Rebecca, we've talked about this or danced around it before. Massacres like this is an insane act. Are all massacre shooters actually crazy?
No, but most are. Now, we don't have data on anywhere between a third to a half because they don't survive the event. They either kill themselves or get killed by law enforcement. So there's a huge portion of them that we don't have any data on. But it is such a crazy act that almost by default, the person can be understood to be crazy in some significant way. Now, legally, that may be meaningless because they still may know what they're doing is wrong and set out to do it, So should be held legally responsible. But some variant on schizophrenia is commonly found. Depression and psychotic depression and schizophrenia, or some aspect of a schizoid disorder, is often found after the fact in shooters who survive the event.
You mentioned that James Holmes, who is the Aurora, Colorado alleged shooter in this instance, you believe that he is insane, and that's interesting. You also mentioned that many of them don't survive. Recent history, however, we do have several survivors. If you think back to the Columbine school shootings, Fort Hood in Texas, and the Virginia Tech shooters, all of them have survived to stand trial. Will we learn new information based on what we can glean from these mass murderers?
I don't think the Columbine shooters survived.
They didn't? Okay.
No, so they stopped by killing themselves. And I also think that's true of Virginia Tech, that he did not survive. It's really rare that we have the spectacle of trying somebody, because often, before it goes to trial, they are declared incompetent to stand trial. That's how crazy they appear to be. There's one particularly interesting case from the late 90s where the murderers were middle school students. In Arkansas at the time, you were not allowed to assign the death penalty or life imprisonment. And so those guys became adults in jail and were released. And that was a huge thing for that community, that those kids got let out of jail. The future for those boys looks very grim indeed. One of them was arrested shortly afterwards on a pot and handgun charge. And another one had another encounter with the police that I don't remember the particulars of. But I think that it doesn't bode well for anybody to spend their developmental years in jail on a murder rap. That you're not really helping build a morally strong and resilient human being.
No, you're probably right. And I'm not sure it's contained to just the developmental years, Rebecca. The recidivism rate of inmates in our prisons, and we're very familiar with this in California, the recidivism rate is very, very high. Once you're in prison, it kind of becomes a revolving door for you. My guest is Rebecca Coffey, author of the e-book, Murder's Most Foul, The School Shooters in Our Midst. And several things about your book I found very disturbing. One of them, Rebecca, was that the pace of the rampage shootings has picked up dramatically since 1989. Is there any particular reason why it's accelerated from that year forward?
No, no one has a definitive answer. What the common answer is copycat crimes. That's all. One interesting aspect of this phenomenon is that most of these murders happen in the suburbs or in rural areas. And those are places where the school really is the adolescent community. You don't run into each other on the street. You're not going to run into each other at the bodega or at the nightclub or at the whatever. You're going to go home. You might get driven to soccer practice, but then you're going to go home for dinner, and then you're going to have your meal and you know, spend the evening alone. So school is where it's happening. All the schools a stage. so that the kids bring their rage to school and act it out there.
A very disturbing fact. All right, Rebecca. Now, the FBI notes that students who kill usually communicate their intent to someone beforehand, and this has been a recurring theme in the research that you did, too.
Right.
What are some examples of this? I mean, are the shooters signaling that they want to be stopped? Or what's going on there?
Well, for example, the Aurora shooter, the alleged Aurora shooter, apparently told his psychiatrist. That's the FBI calls the phenomenon leaking, and that's what he did. He leaked to her. The Virginia Tech shooter started sending very, very bizarre texts to people and also turned in a homework assignment that was supposed to be a poetry assignment. It was supposed to be a poem, a long-form poem. And what he did was deliver a tirade, an angry, vitriolic tirade about Americans being cannibals, which the English professor correctly spotted as very scary and turns him in. So often it shows up in schoolwork or in confidential conversations. The middle school students that I referred to earlier, one of them jumped up on a cafeteria table and pointed at the group, the room, and said, "You're all going to die." Shooters have said, "I'm bringing guns to school on Monday. Don't be in the cafeteria if you want to survive the event." And the kids don't turn them in because it just seems too far-fetched. They're not really going to bring guns to school on Monday, but then they do. So it's just part of human nature to not believe a threat like that. He's showing off, he's joking, he saw a movie, whatever, and they don't want to make a big deal out of it, and they don't turn them in. Part of the problem is zero-tolerance policies in school. If I hear my friend say something like that and I turn him in, he's just going to get thrown out of school. Nobody's going to ask him a question about whether he was serious or not. So all the kids become complicit in a conspiracy of silence, and they're just keeping their heads low and hoping that the authorities don't catch them with their weird jokes. Well, sometimes they aren't weird jokes. So schools need to remove those policies so that kids say, "Hey, Mrs. Walton, I feel really freaked out about something I just heard on the playground."
My guest is Rebecca Coffey, author of the ebook Murders Most Foul, The School Shooters in Our Midst. So tell us a little bit, if you will, Rebecca, about what we do know about these mass shooters, because there are some commonalities, even though the FBI has not been able to put together a definitive profile.
Well, unfortunately, the profile that they've been able to put out, and it does match most school shooters, talks about violent video games, violent media, rap music, feelings of alienation, feeling of being a loner, feeling of being rejected, anger at authority. You've just described most teenage boys in the years 14 to 19, right?
Right.
Yes, it matches all those kids who kill, but yes, it matches all those kids who don't. And another commonality is that I don't believe any one of these kids had significant police history. Right, they've never acted out violently before. So it's hard when part of the profile is that there is no history of violence to know which kid who loves violent media and feels like a loner and hates authority is the one who's going to blow.
All right, let me stop you right there if I can, Rebecca, and I want to drill down on this because you've said earlier in the interview that all of these murders are well planned, they're well thought out, they are diagrams sketched down to the nth degree, and yet none of these shooters have any history of violence. None of them have killed before the day that they actually go on the rampage. If these things are so well planned, wouldn't they have maybe killed some animals or done something to, if you will, wet the bloodlust?
Yes.
Before they do it?
Yes, some. One of the middle school killers was the neighborhood people knew to keep their cats out of his yard because the cats weren't going to come back. So, yes, torturing animals is often a sign, but none of these people had acted violently against another human being. If there was trouble at home, if the parents knew this kid was being weird with animals, it's not necessarily the kind of thing that they would share with the school. When kids change schools, often discipline records about that don't move with them because they want to give the kid a fresh academic start. They think, well, maybe we really didn't serve this kid well. Let's scrub his record clean and send them on and hope for the best. So, no, to the teacher who's dealing with this kid in the back row of her class, she may think she's got a perfectly normal kid there.
Interesting. My guest is Rebecca Coffey. So, Rebecca, do these children come from traumatic pasts, violence in their own family? Is that what spawns their violence?
In many cases, but there's no evidence that it has in all cases. One of these middle school kids pretty much acted out his own traumatic past on his classmates. Another high school kid, his father had done a shooting spree and was just newly out of jail when he went on his shooting spree. So sometimes they're imitating parents or acting out traumatic pasts, but sometimes it really does seem to come out of the blue, at least to the authority figures. Afterwards, many people will say, I knew that was going to happen, or he had dropped a hint. I think that when they're doing the planning, and you're right, they're not impulsive actions. You can't say this ADHD kid in my class is a real problem and he's going to blow. Actually, an ADHD kid probably has a smaller chance of becoming a real problem because he's not going to sit and plan carefully. And while they're planning, they become excited and they can't contain their excitement, partly because they're always in close proximity to the people who will either be their victims or their audience. They're so excited that they talk about it.
My guest is Rebecca Coffey, author of the ebook Murder's Most Foul, The School Shooters in Our Midst. Rebecca, I found it also very interesting that most of the shooters are Caucasian. Is there any link there?
No, not that we know of. I think that the real takeaway message from all of this is that we don't know why it happened. It's a crazy action that we cannot predict. But these shooters, almost all of them, leak the information. And if schools were to follow the FBI guidelines of easing communication between students and adults, and a very important part of that guideline is to ease communication between the schools and the mental health organizations and the schools and the police, we don't know who they are, but they give us clues to who they are, and they give us time to stop them.
My guest is Rebecca Coffey. So, Rebecca, bottom line it for us. How dangerous are our schools today for our children?
Actually, they're much safer in school than they are at home. Most violence happens at home. Practically speaking, they have about 50% the chance of getting killed at school than they do of getting struck by lightning. That being said, when there's a lightning storm, we don't send our children up on Ferris wheels. And we have a storm happening in our schools, and I think that families and teachers and school administrators need to remember that these kids leak, that any hint should be reported to an authority that can calmly assess it and communicate with the appropriate agencies to get that kid help so that everybody stays safe.
My guest has been Rebecca Coffey. Rebecca, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the ebook, where would you direct them to go?
Okay, there is a website, Murders, plural, murdersmostfoul.com. It's an ebook, which means it's available for Kindle, Nook, and any tablet computer. And it's only $1.99. We kept the price very small so that everybody could afford it. And it's only a few hours worth of reading. It's not a book length piece. It's about the length of a long article in a magazine. So really, I'm trying to keep this very accessible because I think that it's important that we know how to prevent these things from continuing.
Rebecca, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Bill.